Welcome to Middle School Matters podcast number 710. There once was a book from Nantucket. We've got some jokes, we've got some AI things for you this week, and we've got some other things you can use in your classroom. So without further ado, here's the wonderful, the magnanimous, the Mr. Troy Patterson.
All right, welcome back to the show. I am Troy Patterson, and with me is the world's greatest co-show host, Mr. Sean McGurr. Hey, Sean.
Well, hello there. How are you?
I'm well. You are, you're getting back in the groove. I'm getting, I don't know what I'm getting. We'll talk about that later, I guess.
You know, that was a very appropriate statement, more so than I think folks realize.
I don't know. But we're back in the groove here. We've got probably back into mostly regular weekly pace. Although for me, kind of every day is Saturday, so... Doesn't mean I'm going to do a podcast every day, but, you know, hey. Hey, do you know why the iPhone went to the dentist?
Why the iPhone went to the dentist? No, I don't know.
Bluetooth.
Oh, sure.
I had a Bluetooth. Yeah. This is one that I think you're going to like. I needed a detergent and a news magazine.
Okay.
I took a little while to get to the store, and when I made it, both were sold out.
Really?
Yeah, you know what they say. Time and tide wait for no man.
Sure do. You're right. Yes.
See?
Yes.
See? Is that one,
yes.
That one works for you?
That one works for me. Yep.
Do you think glass coffins will ever become popular?
I'm not seeing that happening.
Remains to be seen.
Got it. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm. If you could have dinner with anyone from history, who would it be?
Ooh, anybody from history? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'd have to sit and think about that. What's the answer?
I'd pick somebody who likes to pick up the tab.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And somebody who eats decent food, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had a friend.
Yep.
You're not going to let this one go yet, are you? Okay.
No, because I had hot pot the other day, and that's all I'm thinking about when you said that. Sorry, go ahead.
What kind of hot dogs did you have?
Hot pot.
Oh, hot pot.
Ah. Hot pot.
You are a fan of the hot pot. That is true.
I do like hot.
Yes. I like hot pot, too. Not quite as much as you do, but I like hot pot. Oh, I have a friend who's a professional sleepwalker.
Professional?
Ooh. Yes. He's living the dream.
I got you. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I was walking past a farm the other day, and there was a sign that read, duck, comma, eggs.
Oh.
I assumed it was an unnecessary comma. Mm-hmm. Then it hit me.
Oh.
Mm. What do you call a bunch of rabbits walking backwards in a single file line?
Oh, backwards in a single file line. I don't know.
A receding hairline.
Oh, sure. Happened to me years ago.
Yeah. Do you know that purple's my favorite color?
I didn't. I believe it's your daughter's favorite color.
Yeah, I like it more than blue and red combined.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, cool.
Hmm. What was the most important in? Oh, wait. Hang on. Let me try this one more time. What was more important invention than the first telephone?
More important? There's probably a sliced bread reference in here, isn't there?
Nope.
Oh, what?
The second telephone.
Ah, and now you had somebody to talk to.
Yep. I have a couple of visual jokes for you over at middleschoolmatters.com. Two of them revolving around bookstores.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're great. I just think that if you're in a library... One of my favorite ones here is, I'm going to read this one. But you should still head over to middleschoolmatters.com, where they have large print audiobooks.
That's great. I love it.
That one takes a lot of thinking. Or be careful about what you put together on a sign. Hey, speaking of putting things together, one of the things that is important is high-quality instructional materials. Like the stuff that Dave Bidlowski does every show for us. And this week, he's got, this is just something that I think we don't always process enough, that especially in science, there was really a switch over the last 10 years, I would say. And that is kind of switching from textbooks to other processes. And this time, Dave is going to talk about those high-quality instructional materials and how that kind of happened. So here, without further ado, is the wonderful Mr. Dave Bidlowski and the Middle School Science Minute.
Hi, this is Dave Bidlowski of K12Science.net, and this is your K-12 Science Podcast. I was recently reading the July-August 2026 issue of ScienceScope, a magazine for middle school science teachers published by the National Science Teaching Association. And I read an article from the editor's desk entitled HQIM in Practice, written by Patty McGinnis. And she said, "Those of us who have been involved in education for a while can remember a time when the main resource available to teachers was textbooks. A lot has changed since the next generation science standards were adopted. Suddenly, there was a need to teach science from a three-dimensional perspective, one in which students engage in sense-making, explain phenomena, and problem-solve. To meet the standards, organizations such as the National Science Teaching Association recommend a storyline approach. Unlike traditional science teaching pedagogy, in which the teacher organizes a sequence of activities, storylines are coherent for students in the way in which they are constructed. Lessons, driven by student questions around a natural phenomenon, are rigorous, accessible to all, three-dimensional, and aligned with the next generation science standards. Writing exemplary storylines is challenging, but fortunately, high quality instructional materials, HQIM, are available for all levels of K-12 science. Spurred by initiatives such as Ed Reports, an independent educator-led nonprofit that evaluates K-12 curriculum, there has been a significant shift in the development of high-quality, next-generation science standards-aligned materials that prioritize student-driven inquiry over memorization. In addition, high-quality instructional materials often contains summative and formative assessments, have multiple entry points for our emerging language learners, and are scaffolded for diverse learners. Best of all, they free up teachers from the burden of creating materials, allowing them to focus their energies on supporting student sense-making and building scientific knowledge. Implementing high-quality instructional materials is not without its challenges, as it requires a significant change in classroom culture, one in which the teacher moves from being the bearer of all knowledge to a facilitator role who supports student sense-making. This, along with the density of high-quality instructional materials such as the open-source OpenSciEd curriculum, requires professional development if the materials are to increase student achievement. Other barriers to implementing high-quality instructional materials include a lack of confidence in students' ability to handle rigorous materials, as well as a reliance on including additional, often unvetted, content. It becomes imperative, then, to support teachers as they implement high-quality instructional materials. Such support can come in the form of curriculum-based professional learning, during which teachers experience the curriculum as a student while providing time to reflect on their own classroom pedagogy. High-quality instructional materials is not a panacea. No curriculum can replace teachers. When implemented thoughtfully and intentionally, high-quality instructional materials can support our students via their coherence, rigor, and accessibility for all, while allowing teachers to focus on teaching rather than on creating. Interested in making the switch to high-quality instructional materials? Ed Reports provides independent reviews of curriculum and ranks several versions of OpenSciEd as well as LabAids, Issues, and Science as meeting expectations for next-generation science standards alignments, coherence, and teacher usability. In addition, Achieve posts free curriculum units that have been reviewed and are of high quality. And this has been your K-12 Science Podcast.
I really love that he talks about the move to story structure and classroom culture and open source materials. And then one of the biggies, one of the real biggies, is trusting kids to handle rigorous materials. And then, of course, the need for PD. And you had some PD this week as well, which I think we might talk about a little bit. But
sure.
But let's take a quick stroll over to the social web first.
Sure. Just a second here. Sorry about that. Social web, Dublin City University. Like most universities, are starting up, right? And but they posted this week, how can Ireland's curriculum reform succeed if principals have no time to lead? And I thought that's an interesting thing, because one of the things that my district has done is they've added more things for our principals to do. I didn't talk to them.
Fortunately, they took things off their plate, right?
Right, yeah. So nature and administrations abhor a vacuum. How's that sound?
Yeah, that was always, as a principal, that was always the thing. Like, you know, we talked about it with teachers, and we tried to talk about it as, like, administrators, and it's like just adding on. I've been by Dublin City University, by the way.
Have you?
Yes, I have.
That's nice.
It is.
So new research from Dr. Sabrina Fitzsimmons and Professor Catherine Furlong reveals high burnout among school leaders. I'm kind of guessing that that's one of the problems. And there's an opinion piece in the journal, and I put a link in the show notes for you if you want to take a look at that. I don't know how many admins we have reading this, or if you're looking to push your admin over the edge, maybe you go read this and say, hey, I got some ideas. Please don't do that to them. Also from Dublin City University, and I thought this would be perfect for Troy. Is cursive handwriting still worth teaching in a world of laptops and touchscreens? And Dr. Sinead McCauley Lamb from DCU Institute of Education joined News Talk to explain why putting pen to paper remains, oh, and I love this next word, essential. You can listen to the full interview in the show notes.
And I'm going to need to listen to it. I did not listen to it before we were putting the show together here. But I will say the research has been consistent that writing, taking notes via handwritten methodologies, and I think that's important. Right now, so far, it's been paper. Changes the way that the brain works and that you learn more that way. And I've been wondering if you do handwritten notes on a tablet, like if you pull your iPad out and your Apple Pencil and you take notes. And so far, I've not found research on that, whether it falls into the digital category or whether it falls into the taking notes on paper category. So I still do not know if that is where that falls on it, because the research is clear that if learners take notes by hand, they remember more, they learn more.
Yeah. So now we just have to push you over the edge and over to the cursive camp. That's all.
Oh, I'm okay with the cursive camp. I like to tease you about it, but I write in cursive as well.
Yeah.
But I do like to tease. In fact, I sent something to Sean this week about...
That's one of the reasons why there's something in the show notes this week. I did cursive, and I wrote out my notes for my 5-hour course at ISTE this summer. Some popping going on over here. And I've got to go back and look at my notes, right, again. But I remember, and I can visualize on the page what I wrote, and we're talking, this is like 7-8 weeks ago. I can visualize on the page my notes, and I can't visualize on the iPad my notes.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah. So I wonder, and I don't have an explanation for it, but just sitting here, I can mentally in my head, I know where certain things are in those notes that I took. I couldn't tell you where on the online part. And I've got decent notes, right, on my online handwriting piece. It's just not. And part of me is wondering if I'm thinking about other things at the same time. Because when I'm writing, I'm focused on making sure I get down what's on the screen. Mm-hmm. Whereas when I'm writing on the iPad, I know the first thing I do is I take a screenshot or I take a picture of what's up on the thing. And then I start writing around it, my notes. And I'm so worried and focused about the picture and the other stuff that I'm distracted from what I'm actually writing down. And I wonder if that's just enough split in focus.
Yeah. So the process is different for you if you're doing it on paper versus... Yeah, and that's... like I said, I've been trying to find some research, been looking for research on this. It is really, really clear that typing notes out is way less effective than handwriting notes. Research on that is like just super clear. The question that I had asked, and Liz Kolb did a lot of this work, and I asked Liz Kolb about, well, what about writing on a iPad? And she's like, well, there's no research that, you know, kind of points to one or the other. So that's interesting to me. And then, so now I also wonder then, what if you didn't do it that way? What if you took notes? What if essentially you treated the iPad like paper? You took advantage of none of the additional resources, the picture taking, the recording, that kind of thing. What if you just took notes and... again, I don't think the research is there yet. I don't think the research has been done. So, or it's been done, I don't know. That's a possibility.
I might have a resource that might help with answering that question. We'll talk about it later in the show. But okay. Remind me, bring that back up, and and then I'll let you talk for a few minutes, and let me run through, and I'll see if that works.
Okay.
All right. Eric Kurtz. Yeah, what's new in Google for Schools? Well, he has a presentation online. You can go and watch his video where he did his monthly Google Education Group Ohio meeting. It's coming up, I should say. He hasn't done it yet. It's coming up on August 31st at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Get the latest Google EDU updates, right? Helpful tips and resources. Eric's always good for that. And you can get the details, show notes.
And I don't know if I switched over because I've long... subscribe, but I subscribe to that through work. I don't know if I switched because that account is gone now, right? They have officially killed off that account for me.
That's probably just frozen.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I checked. They didn't disable as quickly as I thought they were going to, but It's disabled, and it should be disabled, honestly. I'm fine with that, but so I don't know if I switch that account over. I don't know if I switch my subscription over. So,
well, the good news is that it's a free sub.
Yep. Yep.
Right. So, also from Eric Kurtz this week, a fantastic day at Leland Public School, sharing his Wrestle, Rap, Reflect framework, where students wrestle with content independent of AI, rap with AI to enhance and extend learning, and then reflect on their use of AI to incorporate it. And he's got all of his PD resources there in the link that we have in the show notes. It's the same method as the human AI human, H-A-I-H method that Tony Frontier has proposed. Matt Miller has proposed the same idea, just with different terminology. So if you're looking for another, you know what, the H-A-I-H thing might not be kid-friendly. This one might be a little more kid-friendly with having kids understand what you want them to do with it. So I like the phrasing, but the idea is it's the same idea that Frontier, Matt Miller, and a bunch of other folks have been proposing when it comes to.
And if you're going to be an edu celebrity, you got to have a.
Oh, yeah. TLA.
That's right. So. When you become an edu celebrity, Sean, what is going to be? Have you decided what your shtick is going to be yet?
My shtick is going to be pragmatics in education. That's what it's going to be. Pragmatics in education.
Okay, I would figure something with lesson planning.
Yes, that would be the practical, pragmatic function of my PD. It's going to be, oh boy, this is getting me in trouble, which kind of leads into resources.
Okay.
You want to do resources now, or you want to do resources?
Sure. No, we can do resources.
Referenced it twice now. All right. So I did this. I did a couple things. So when I went to ISTE, oh boy.
Oh boy.
I may need a job. I went to ISTE and I talked to it's just a long way around to getting to this. I went to ISTE and I said, I found the iReady people. And there was other folks I needed to see on the exhibit floor. And I got to them like right before the exhibit floor closed on the last day. And I said, I have a problem and I need to talk to you guys about this. I need a solution from you because. Mm-hmm. All the consultants have been telling my central office that we have to have 45 minutes, that 45 minutes is everything. I said, but you and I both know. The kids just turn it on, and they've actually got it down to they know when the thing comes up and says, are you still there? And they click the button. They turn it on and do whatever they want to do anyway. They're not actually engaged. They're just putting in time. And to my amazement, the iReady people said, yeah, we're aware of that problem, and we've never said it should be 45 minutes. And I said, no, you understand, your consultants are telling every admin 45 minutes. I said, we've been saying two lessons, but we get in trouble if we don't do the 45 minutes thing and we say two lessons. And they said, no, you shouldn't. It should be two lessons. And I don't remember Ken's last name, but he said, you tell him Ken said two lessons. Thank you, Ken. But I didn't see your last name on the name tag, so I don't know who Ken exactly is. But they're right. It should be two lessons, right? So I went to – we had our opening teacher meeting, and our principal said, don't forget, 45 minutes of iReady. And I was like, oh, no. So I went to him in his office, and I explained. I said, iReady said they're letting consultants go who say 45 minutes. I said, I talked to the iReady people, and it's got to be two lessons. And after I explained the logic to him, my principal looked at me and said, yeah, that makes a whole lot more sense. And he says, I have to go talk to central office, which means it's going to be
wait a minute. I got to talk to a guy to talk to a guy about talking to a guy.
And I was like, holy cow. Right. And so here's how I'm going to do this without getting in trouble. Years ago, we had a superintendent, and we would go to the superintendent and say, you know, this rule that you have seems a little ridiculous. So, for example, when it came to count day, our superintendent made us hand write out the attendance list of every kid who attended class that day. So I had to write out 125 names twice a year. Hand write 25 names. All right. So that took up a significant portion of my day that day. Handwriting names. And we had computers. This is not when we had the scan press. We actually had computers that took the attendance. Mm-hmm. And we went to her and we said, we have computers that will do this. Can we just print the sheet and sign it? She goes, no. No, the state of Michigan says it must be handwritten. And finally somebody said, you know, that doesn't seem right. And so they called the state. And after the state got up off the floor from laughing so hard, they said, no, we've never required that. And she was doing it simply because that's what she wanted us to do. She didn't have any reason. And the state had never had any reason. And so that's when we started fact-checking everything she said. And it turns out 90% of what she was telling us wasn't based in pedagogy or best practice or anywhere. It's just that that's the way she wanted to do it. And we were too dumb not to check her on it. Anyway, I found a resource. It was announced at ISTE this year. I think we talked about it a little bit. It's called Stretch AI, right?
Yes.
Stretch AI. And I use this as my example with my principal. I said, hey, here's this academic resource. He's not going to use it, but I wanted to show him anyway. And you ever have a principal look at you and he's like, his eyes are saying, my attention's here, but I would really, really rather be doing something else than talking to you. That's where
I hate to say this, but I'm sure at some point I was that principal.
Well, I do it to people all the time. The difference between me and most people is I don't care.
I respected everybody, and that was never my intent, but I'm sure at some point in my life, I was looking at somebody going, I really want to be or do something else right now. So, yes.
Well, that's where I was at. So, Stretch AI is nice, right? Those of you familiar with John Hattie, he used a correlation coefficient, the scale from 0 to 1. With anything above 5 being, when I took statistics class, we were told anything 0.5 or above is statistically significant.
Significant, right.
Right. Well, Hattie moved the bar to 0.4. And somebody said, well, why 0.4? And his reason was, because I like 0.4. So there's no serious reason why. It's just that he made a choice.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Uh-huh. Well, lesson objectives on the board and content objectives on the board are a 0.4 correlation, not above the 0.5 threshold. And I was thinking, wait a minute. So I started digging. And then Grant Wiggins wrote before he died, he was like, stop posting your objectives. That's a waste of time. And then he died. So nobody could like drill down on that. Or he was assassinated by administrators from central office. I don't know. I'm not saying they did. I'm not saying they didn't. But, you know, posting them means that it's an easy tick box on the portfolio or on the observation thing where you could, you know, mark it off and say,
sure,
and observe. Sure. So I get it. I understand why they want to do it because it makes it easier for admin to fill out a form. Understand. Grant Wiggins is probably right. So I went into Stretch AI. Now, Stretch AI has all of ISTE's articles and all of ASCD's articles and all of their data. And it's all pushed into an LLM, which is great for fact-checking best practice and research and everything that comes into. So I said, hey, I'm interested in your ideas and strategies that integrate engagement-focused practices to replace objective posting in my classroom. I mean, Grant Wiggins says, we need to stop doing it. You know, is there something that's better? Give me something that's better. So Stretch said, well, focusing on engagement-focused strategies that move beyond posting objectives can invigorate your classroom and make learning more student-centered, relevant, and meaningful. And then it proceeded to give me six different ways that I can make my classroom more engaging without posting objectives.
Okay. Did you fact check the fact checking?
Absolutely not. Because this is all about politics and absolutely nothing to do with being good teaching.
Okay.
This is a point of contention here.
Okay. Because first of all, I just for the record, I agree with you. I have never been big on I remember when we had to not only post the objective on the board, but then the kids had to choral read the objective on the board.
Right.
At the beginning of the hour, because it was frequently they were not using any kind of block scheduling. And then again at the end of the hour, and then, you know, check with how the kids processed that, which wasn't really the kids processing how they had met that goal for the day, but yes. So
right.
Okay. I just wondered, because I always keep in the back of your head that AI resources are going to agree with you. They will reinforce your bias like crazy. So always keep that in the back of your head.
Yes. And I will admit, I am absolutely 100% biased, because I would really like to find something better than writing objectives on the board, because I think Grant Wiggins is right.
I do too.
But I want best practices that I can, so when the admin walks in and goes, yeah, I can go, hey, look, you know, I did some research. I'm actually like here doing the research thing. And so it gave me the research. And then if you want to find out, so Troy is fact checking. By the way, you go through, check it, and then we're going to find out if this is Troy fact checked and approved. Well, I'm going to make that sticker or stamp. I'm going to go make that. And we're going to start posting it on my stuff in the show notes.
Fact checked by a cranky old man.
Yeah. Fact checked by Troy, fact checked and approved by Troy. But the nice thing is that with Stretch's answer, it gives me a link to the research and the articles that came out in ASCD to, back up why it told me. Now, are there times where it is going to make up stuff just to make up stuff? Yes, but as I've been working with it, if I'm asking an actual research-based type of question, the research has been pretty legit. I've not found anything. I did find one that was like very tangential, and I was like, okay, you were stretching it here. Yes, it fits, but you're stretching it. If I'm asking for like a process question and like how it processes, it'll give me stuff, and the research has nothing to do. Like I asked it, so how far back does your research go? Like, what's your depth of, what's your knowledge base depth by years? I asked it, I was trying to figure out what it knew and, you know, what scope of things I could ask based on like time and how far back, that sort of thing. And it told me, but then it also, it gave me three sources, and the three sources had absolutely nothing to do with how many years worth of material ASCD was pulling from to give me the answers that I was looking for. And I smiled. I was like, well, that's, thank you. I appreciate you trying to be helpful there.
Yes.
But the nice thing is I got six things that are better. According to it. Yes. Have I tried them all? No.
I'm just looking through these, though, and I am betting that you have actually tried all of these. So,
yes. I'm sorry. I didn't actually. I've not gone to the articles, is what I'm saying. So,
yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Anyways, so it gave the answer. And then at the very, very bottom, it gives me a list of links, sources links. And then I threw in where you can go find Stretch AI over at stretchai.isti.org. It's fun to play with. Should it always be run through your head? Yes, absolutely. But when it comes to... So one of the things with AI is defining the content it pulls from, right? There's a difference between pulling a bucket of water out of the kiddie swimming pool in the backyard and pulling a bucket of water out of the ocean. Mm-hmm. You're drawing from different source sets. And this one is honed in on just ASCD's material and ISTE's material. So you're drawing in from a specific source set rather than something that comes from everywhere. It's not, should not be just the one and only thing that you use, but boy, it's going to be a little better than pulling from something that's very, very general and broad and, you know, you could get anything. Whereas this is stuff that's been mined. You're mining in a much, much more refined vein. I'm looking for a good metaphor. I'm not finding it. But so Stretch AI, you could have a lot of fun with it. When I showed it out to my principal, I used the Grant Wiggins example. And his eyes got big. And I left it there and walked out. So the seed has been planted.
Yeah.
It's not going to make a difference, but now he knows that if he wanted to fact check something that is just being willy-nilly said, he could fact check it if he wanted to.
Yeah. So,
yeah. Stretch is supposed to be free till the end of August. Obviously with this show, being on the date that we have, it'll come out today probably. You got till Monday. But otherwise, it's reserved for ISTE members, not the basic level ISTE, but the next two levels up, Enhanced and Pro, I think. But if you're Enhanced or Pro, you get access to this. It has been worth it for me. I've used it to pull resources. I'll say, give me a list of resources on this topic. And then I go through and I filter the resources, and I'll throw those into Notebook LLM. And I'm getting some interesting product out of it. Or I'll take those resources and I'll go to Claude or ChatGPT and say, you know, I found a bunch of these resources. Let's use this as a source set for talking about these different topics. And it comes back and it helps ChatGPT or Claude hone in better on a topic, a subject, than having to sit there and filter through a bunch of stuff that it willy-nilly finds across the net. And you're like, no, we're not talking about that. We're talking about this. And it makes your agent operate a little more efficiently. How's that sound?
Yep. Yeah. Anyway. And that's one of the big things that I keep hearing over and over and over is the concept of not using just one AI, but essentially having them check each other's work.
I did that with the Constitution thing that we've been playing with. I'm on my third flavor of Constitution. Instruction set, foundational instructional document. And one of the things I found was if I take it and I ask ChatGPT, all right, what are we missing? What do we know that we don't know? What are we missing here? And it'll go through and evaluate. And if I do that five or six times, I finally get to the point where ChatGPT will say, no, we're not missing anything. We've got a good document here. I'll take it. I go over to Claude and I'll go, there's got to be stuff missing here. What are we missing here? And Claude will go, you're missing this and you're missing that. And you really could beef this part up. And I'll just take that response and go over and say, well, what do you think? And it'll go, well, yeah, I guess we could. Oh, so you just tired out on me. Got it. Okay. Well, let's talk about this a little more. So I've got, I think, my first version of a instructional constitution. I'm on version 4.1. And I use that it's really good. I like it. And I'm forking that into more specific documents that are smaller, more specific pieces. And I've got one for student instruction. So I can throw that into somewhere and go, you know, if a student's using a local AI, this is how I want you to behave. And these are the student parameters. And I've got one for, so one of the things that came up in our department meeting, our 3-hour department meeting the other day, was they hated going from one AI to another and then having to retrain it on everything. I said, well, here's a document. I said, it's got all the basics in it. You just every time you throw it in there first and say, all right, we're going to use this as a touchstone. This is our reference document. When we talk about things, this is what you're going to reference or refer to, and how the framework you're going to build the stuff you give me back. And the AI usually goes, yeah, okay, cool, we can do that. And then you start having your conversations, and you've essentially given your AI all of the prior knowledge you wanted for constructing and building things. So
yeah,
it needs more work, but when I get it done, I'll share it with, I'll put it in the show notes somewhere.
Somewhere. Yeah, we can, and we absolutely can add that in to wherever it needs to be. So, all right. I got a couple of resources for you as well this week. One is this, you are essentially what, an etymologist.
I am.
Yeah.
That's better than being an entomologist, I suppose. entomologist or a proctologist.
You enjoy the history of words. In the history of words.
I enjoy a good bon mot, yeah.
Yes. And Merriam-Webster has a resource called Time Traveler. And I think this can be fun, and I think it could come in handy. Essentially, this will give you when a word was first used in print. So you can kind of search to see what when a word first occurred. And or you can go year by year. So you can they have a little drop down here. And this goes back to, you have to keep scrolling. This goes back to the 1600s.
Oh, nice.
Does it go back to the 1500s? So, yes, this goes back to the 1500s. 1578 was the first use of the word awesome.
Oh.
That's pretty neat. And so then you can then click on the word and you can see lots of, it's Merriam-Webster, so you can see the definitions and a little did you know examples, recent web examples, and its first known use. And so it's a neat way to look around for words and when words happened, if you're teaching social studies as well. 1578, also, by the way, buckbean.
That sounds like fun.
I know that's one of your favorite words, right, Sean?
Oh, I was just thinking the other day, you know, I need to use that word again.
There you go.
But it doesn't contain a thorn, so I just kind of set it to the side.
Yeah. There you go. All
right, it doesn't have the word synthenoesis. I'm disappointed, Troy.
Yeah, okay. Well, it is formist on English.
Well, synthenoesis is now an English word formed from the ancient Greek.
Well, maybe because this only goes back This only goes back to 2025, so.
Yeah, well, you know, it should continue. Oh, 2025. Okay, all right, I'll give it that. So, this word wasn't created until an hour ago.
You might have to wait until next year.
Oh, no, a year.
Yeah. Well, I guess technically you only have a few months left, but.
Well, that's true.
Yeah. So you, but yeah, you need right. to use it. You're going to need to use it on a website, publicly available website first.
I did. I used it on Facebook this morning.
Okay. Then the other thing that you might want to check out is reading maps.
Ooh.
And this combines the nice geography with language arts. And you can search for titles, authors, and all of that good stuff. So, for example, you could click on Moby Dick by Herman Melville, and you can either see the whole story. If you just, by default, I think, you see the whole trip, like each step that has gone through. You can click on it, like starts in Nantucket. Ishmael signs aboard the Pequod under the vengeful Captain Ahab. Then you can click on the second one, the second stop, or you can click the interactive journey, which you makes you click each stop. You're making faces.
There once was a book in Nantucket.
Okay.
Sorry. All of a sudden, the limerick came to mind.
Okay, well, that's another resource that you could use without falling apart. So let's take a look at Access Translator.
Okay, we'll do that. Access to Culture Translator. Sorry, teach middle school. Tickled my funny bone. Access to Culture Translator. Just had a few couple of, it had its regular articles in there, but they did have some things from the news that I thought was interesting. Australia's much touted social media plan for, or ban for teenagers is falling apart. There's a paywall link in the show notes. As state authorities find it impossible to outsmart the tech prowess of 15-year-olds. Of course, NAR. I guess that's a Australian term. We kind of talked about this when we first heard the news that Australia was going to do this ban.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it came up again this week in the news with Facebook's Meta agreeing to
$17 billion.
Was brilliant. Okay, yeah. It was billion. I think the company's only $114 billion in value, but or $140 billion.
$1.4 trillion.
Oh, okay. So they can do this. This is not going to put the sorry. Oh, yeah. You know, they have to lay off an engineer. But it was a conversation that came up on a lot of news sources and podcasts this week. And how is Facebook going to verify these kids' age, because kids right now are getting onto Facebook and they're getting on there at the age of, you know, 8, 9, 10, 12.
Yep.
You know, under the 13-year-old limit. So what's Australia going to do? Cause they're going to come up with something and other people are going to say, ooh, well, maybe we should do that too. So keep an eye out for that. All right. I don't know if you've seen this. I've seen this online in places talking about this. China has a big box office winner in the movie department this week. And it was made on a shoestring budget. And by shoestring, I'm talking probably a wet noodle. if you're familiar with Chinese noodles, we're talking about birthday noodles. Really long, really thin. The plot is a dream about a cow, or a dream of a cow, or a cow's dream. And the movie is praised for its craftsmanship. It's absolutely horrible.
It's absolutely horrible.
It's rotten. It is if you had made an AI puppet show and then acted and performed it very badly, people are going to see it because it is so bad. Yeah. So this thing is making money because it's bad. So, no, craftsmanship here is in quotes. And I put a sarcasm rating on the craftsmanship part. I've seen segments of it. If you're looking for something to show the kids and go, this is an example of very bad quality work. That way it fits. It fits the bill. I would show this. That's where I am on it. Anyway, this I thought was interesting. According to data from Eventbrite, events advertising shared hobbies, think Mahjong or birdwatching, they're being advertised as meet cutes or chances to meet potential romantic partners. And it's increased by 117% over the last year among teens and kids. So, hey, you know, the population cliff may not be coming after all. Fan fiction publishing platform Wattpad. Do you remember Wattpad from 30 years ago?
Vaguely.
Kids were using Wattpad like crazy, and they would put all kinds of screed on there, and they'd rant about their teachers and Wattpad, and they could do that. And at the time, there was absolutely no recourse, right? And they could say all kinds of nasty things about their teachers on Wattpad. Anyway, yes, and there's still some Wattpads out there. So here's a side story. It's funny? I don't know. So I am now on my third kid from this one particular family. And I love these kids. Kids are great. I told the mom, I'm collecting your kids. She goes, you collect Stacy's kids? I said, yes, because I had the mom and I had the dad. Well, the dad is one of those kids on Wattpad who wrote all kinds of nasty things about me, right? I think it's ironic that mom comes to conferences and dad hasn't shown up. But yeah, so I know where it is. I'm tempted to bring that up. Hey, this is still posted. You want to do something about that? Anyways, a long time haven for teens experimenting with fan fiction updated its content guidelines, and some users were convinced incorrectly that Wattpad would no longer post or host sexually explicit content and fled to another platform called AO3. So just so you're aware, Wattpad still does the we'll let kids do the inappropriate stuff. And now there's a new one to look out for called AO3. So just be aware. That's the news this week from Access to Culture Translator. And of course they got three articles, stuff that's been important to teens over the course of the past week. And you can subscribe to the newsletter and get it in your email box on every Friday.
And it's just a reminder that there's always another option. It's part of the whack-a-mole of tech ed is, yeah, we can turn this one off or we can block this one, that one, but the kids are going to find another one. And it's, you know, the state authorities finding that it's difficult to outsmart the 15-year-olds. Like, yeah. So, yeah. If you're a math teacher, you might like the puzzles.mathseed.space. They have a couple different variants of different puzzles, and every day it kind of changes, and you have kind of algorithms, and there's some neat stuff there. So just want to put that on your radar. And then I also want to talk about a little article from Angela Duckworth. You're familiar with Angela Duckworth, right?
Yes, she usually produces really good stuff.
Yes, she does really good stuff. And she has a free article, a guest essay over in the New York Times. And the title is, I Study Successful People. They Have One Habit in Common. And I'll give away the habit right now. The habit is they ask for help. And she's also big, well known for posting about grit and perseverance. She wrote a book called Grit and perseverance and struggling through. And I think this is one of those messages about helping, about working with kids and metacognition and getting them to understand that they don't have to do everything on their own. Because I think a lot of high achievers are, one of the things that gets in their way is they think they can never ask for help. And I think it's also important to define what that help looks like and feels like. I thought this was a really nice article. Good for teachers to remember as we're starting the school year off. The illusion of self-sufficiency, that we frequently get more help than we acknowledge. It's okay to ask for help and not to have to do everything on one's own. So, let's see here. Just real quick, couple things. I always hesitate on some of the... some of the experts. Bill Gates has become an expert because he did something. He was a good businessman and became really rich. And that doesn't mean that he is an expert in everything. It doesn't even mean he's an expert in everything in technology. I remember at one point he was going to, he had this plan for how you could evaluate teachers and he was going to fix education. And he's no longer in that business. That didn't work. But I think that a lot of the AI stuff has a history through technology, has a history in, goes back to Charles Babbage and the thinking machines. And some of the, so this goes back to late 1800s. And I'm going to reference a couple of articles here. One is from the New York Times. I don't remember. But I linked to an article here for you that Bill Gates was an AI optimist. Now he's scared of what could go wrong. And then I've also linked to Bill Gates's article that he wrote, which is it, which that one is referencing, which he says the turbulent AI era is here. The choices we make now are critical. So I think this is another data point. I think it's important that we do understand what's happening and we make choices with that, in terms of what's going on and how it's going on and how it's going to affect education. I think that's where the real work needs to happen. And school districts should be doing that work. And then along with that is a report from MIT's Ad Hoc Committee on AI Use in Teaching, Learning, and Research Training. This just came out. I think it is an interesting report to read through. It is lengthy, and it talks about learning and teaching with intentionality. No one size fits all. So there's a lot of good things that I think we need to go through there. right. And then you've got something on modern Sumerians. And before we get to Sean talking about that, he's going to turn his microphone back on. So, we lost Sean. Suppose it could be on my side, but yes, no. Okay. Technology has been resolved, and I guess that's how a modern Sumerian would fix it.
Well, it's ironic that we're talking about ancient stuff, but it's the modern technology that cuts out, right?
Yep.
Maybe that's the magic words. So somebody has created a modern Sumerian website with the goal of bringing Sumerian back as a living language. And so what they're doing is taking their knowledge of Sumerian and saying, if the Sumerians were alive today, you know, obviously computers were not a thing for them, but let's make a word for computer. Kind of like what I did with synthnoesis. See, there you go. It's another use there. So we'll get that in the dictionary yet. And so that's what they did. So you can type in stuff and it'll give you the modern Sumerian equivalent of it. And I've been following it now for a while on their social media, and it actually makes a lot of sense when they explain how things are put together. Characters, something you have to learn individually, but like the words and the phrasing and the grammar, it's like, oh, that's easy. I could do that. If I learn the vocab, I know how, oh, this prefixes, suffixes, and roots. It's all right here. I could do this. So there you go. If you've ever wondered what modern Sumerian would look like. One of the things I learned over the summer is that we think of cuneiform as being an ancient writing system. Well, the last cuneiform language died out at 1 AD. That's when they stopped officially using cuneiform in some places. So it's actually lasted a very, very, very long time. And it's not been gone as long as we think it has been gone. So I have lost show notes. Anyway, so check it out. I put the link in the show to the website. I did. All of a sudden, I looked and the notes are gone. ModernSumerian.org is where you can go find it. Please go to the show notes and click that link among many others. You know, you'll be as smart as people that go to MIT.
That's true. And I do want to encourage you to head over to middleschoolmatters.com, where we do have show notes to everything we've talked about this week, and even a little bit more. We usually sneak in some things that we frequently sneak in some things that we didn't get to talk about. We would love it if you would head over to the podcast catcher of your choice. Tell us, give us a 5-star rating. Tell us why Sean is the world's greatest co-show host. If you're in the, if you're north of the equator, you're probably headed back to school. And we like to take that journey with you. With that, this has been Middle School Matters for middle school educators who care. All opinions expressed on this podcast are exclusively the opinions of the host and guests and not indicative of any employer.